feel clever. You feel good at your job.
Yeah. Even if my job is.
And because you deserve your job, you deserve a snack, a little treat.
Wait, really? You're going to let me go get a treat right now?
I mean, I guess. We have just
you're literally giving me attitude about how like smart and clever I feel. So I don't want to go and get a little snack, a little treat, a little soupçon of something sweet. Because I don't want to hear any attitude from you. Raggedy ass bitch.
Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I'm your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie. And I just don't I don't know anything.
I love how I do this. We do the same intro every episode, and every time
and
you're
forget.
Like, I catch you off guard with it.
Yeah. Well, because I know that there was that moment in time where I was really going to try and have a fun fact and an interesting thing to say. But it's kind of like if somebody asks you, hey, what's your favorite food?
Brown.
No, I have no memory. I've never eaten a day in my life. What's an interesting fact? A group of ferrets is called a business.
And a group of meerkats is called a mob.
A mob, and they're matriarchal societies. And they eat mealworms because they have the same consistency as a cherry tomato, where they're crunchy on the outside and nice and soft and plump on the inside.
Ooh, the little cream-filled kind.
I wouldn't know that from experience, but if I did, it'd be okay, right?
Today we're going to watch Series 8, Episode 9, Flatline.
Okay, ER.
This is one of my favorite episodes, personally.
Okay, The Pit.
I hope you're really going to like it.
Watch me hate it.
But I adore this episode.
And do you know what would make me really enjoy it?
What's that?
If I had a snack.
To give you an idea, Jamie Matheson also wrote this one. He wrote Mummy on the Orient Express, and he wrote this one.
Okay.
But he wrote this one first.
Okay.
And Stephen Moffat liked it so much, he offered him the chance to do Mummy on the Orient Express. So I feel like I'm in good company saying that this episode is pretty good. It's one of my favorites. I'd probably put this in maybe my top 10 episodes, like if I was really thinking about it.
Okay. Where would you rank it in terms of like, because my favorite so far has been Blink.
So I would probably put it in the bottom half of the 10, like, like somewhere around like number 8, number 7, number 6. Mainly because I know so distinctly what my top like 4 are.
What are your top 4?
Okay. I guess we'll get to this.
We don't have to. It's just you said it.
That's fair. So my favorite episode right now is an Inshuti episode called Dot and Bubble.
Okay.
Like that one I think about like once a week. I like it that much.
Okay.
The episode after that is a Capaldi episode called Heaven Sent. We'll get to that next season.
Okay.
After that, my favorite episode is the Silence in the Library two-parter where we meet River Song for the first time.
Uh-huh.
And then Blink after that.
Okay.
So I'm really excited because my two favorite episodes we haven't even gotten to yet.
Yeah.
This, I guess I'd still probably put it in my top 10. Like this is I think this is a really great episode, partly due to the strength of the villains in it.
Okay.
The villains I don't mind spoiling this a little bit because it's the whole premise of the episode. The villains of this are creatures from another dimension. And the way that they interact with ours is by sucking a dimension out of things. So if they take something three dimensional and make it two dimensional is sort of the simplest way I can put that. I tell you that partly because I think knowing that actually makes some early parts of the episode better.
Okay.
But also because it's related to the Cassie Brafassi today.
Fuck you.
So as I just said, the enemies of this episode suck a
flat line.
Yeah, because they make things flat.
Oh, not like a heart monitor.
Not like a heart monitor. No.
Okay. Yeah, that is good information for me to have early on.
Yeah. Like I said, the enemies of this episode suck a dimension out of things. And so the doctor invents a device that puts a dimension back. What does he call this invention, Cassie?
Oh, fuck right off.
I have some options for you. I'm not totally throwing you out into the wind here. So option number A, the redimensionalizer.
Mm-hmm.
Number B, the sonic restorer.
Mm-hmm.
Option number C, the TUDIS.
Oh, TUDIS is good.
New phone, TUDIS.
Hold on, I need to answer a work text really quick.
You're good.
I like TUDIS.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's quite as fun.
Here's the real question. Do you think I came up with TUDIS?
Yes. So I think it's A, the redimensionalizer.
The redimensionalizer. All right, Cassie thinks the doctor invents the redimensionalizer. And, this one's more for you to flex your creative muscles a little bit, just because I'm curious. I've described this as sucking a dimension out of things. But the TARDIS is like a fourth, maybe even a fifth dimensional object. So what do you think it looks like when the TARDIS loses a dimension? Just to give you a hint, it does not get flat.
Okay.
And there's also a couple different answers to this, so.
Okay. I don't know.
What do you think would be fun to see on television?
I think visually, if it gets, because I can show you what it would look like.
Mm-hmm.
But if I show you what it looks like, that's not very helpful for audio listeners.
Not for the podcast, no.
Because my thought is do you have a memory in your head of watching an older VHS tape that the image itself is kind of blurring together and choppy, sort of wavy.
Mm-hmm. So you think it gets distorted?
I think that because the way that I understand the TARDIS is not unlike how crystal gems work in the human universe, which is not, it is a physical space, but it is its chosen form is this box, very much like how the crystal gems are we are literally just light.
Yeah.
Our gems are a physical form, but we are a manifestation of light in a way that you can see and perceive.
Okay.
So I think the TARDIS kind of operates the same way in my understanding.
It gives off a light effect is what you're getting at?
Like a distortion, light effect. Yeah. Okay. Especially if we're watching it.
Okay.
There has to be some kind of distortion.
I think
a light effect is interesting.
Okay.
Otherwise, it might just be we're dealing with the senses. It's either going to be a light thing or a sound thing that happens.
OK, I was just curious because I wanted to see what your creative muscles flexed a little bit there.
Yeah, I'm being scientific right now, Zach.
And also,
I'm wearing a scarf and a sweater vest.
You to feel I want to give you a broad enough category.
A professor.
All right. Well, I guess that means we will find out together if the doctor invents the redimensionalizer and if when the TARDIS loses a dimension, it has some sort of strange light effect.
You said distortion first. So distortion / light effect.
Distortion,
is what I'm
some visual effect happens around it. And we'll find out together as we watch Series 8, Episode 9, Flatline.
Beep. Ooh. Beep. Gonna harmonize with you, never mind.
I ran out of breath so fast for some reason. I think I'm still a little sick.
Or you just don't have good lung capacity
anymore. I used to.
Well, you gotta practice.
Are you a looting galoot in pursuit of a hoot? Do you spend your afternoons in a blue mood with absolutely nothing to do? Well, don't be a fool. Scoot your boots down to Route 22 for the newest amusement that's sweeping the news. It's Rudy Tooty's Tooty Fruity Shooting Place. At Rudy Tooty's, we refuse to use three-dimensional produce. It's rude, it's crude, and so many are full of ooze. So you should choose to use our boom tubes to blow the wazoo off a photo of a honeydew or a water balloon. Whether you're a seasoned brute or just a little goof, It's a hoot from ages 1 to 92. The truly astute get a free kazoo if they can harpoon the hidden prune. So bring your snoots on down to our stoop and have a good old-fashioned fruit dispute at Rudy Tootie's 2D Fruity Shooting Place off Route 22 next to Stu and Drew's Noodle and Tattoo Room. See you real soon!
And we are back from Flatline.
Oh, look at you. You're just a teeny tiny TARDIS.
Itty bitty baby TARDIS.
Curse you, tiny TARDIS!
So what'd you think, Cassie?
I liked it.
I really like this episode. I like a lot of what's going on in it.
Here's the thing. I liked it. I definitely see why you like it.
I'm going to take that as a compliment.
Well, there's a lot of very interesting visual effects.
Yes.
And not practical, like, oh, wow, that's really impressive makeup or costuming. It's, these are cool, like,
computer effects. I mean, there are still some cool, like, practical effects with all, like, the paint on the walls and, like.
Well, yes, but not in the same way. Like, the most interesting practical effect here is teeny tiny TARDIS with full grown man Peter Capaldi inside.
Yeah, him like having to like, especially when it like first shrinks down to just like a half size TARDIS and you watch him like fit his way out of it. I love that. I think that's great.
That's awesome.
And then later when it's just, when it's so little, it's just his face poking out of it.
Yeah.
I love that too. I think that's hilarious.
I like just a hand sticking out of Clara's bag.
just go that way. Go over that way. Here, take my stuff.
It's so funny. Like, there's a lot of good bits because of the situation that we are in. But at the end of the day, I understand why this is up there in your favorites, because it is a decent enough story that is accompanied by VFX that match the story.
Yes, I think. And it's also
like the VFX do a very good job at communicating what is going on. And it's not, nothing is done in a grotesque way where it's like, oh, this is.
Yeah, it's not gratuitous.
I'm not distracted by how anything is looking to be like, oh, well, I don't like the story because this was made on a MacBook from the 90s.
Well, even then, it's still like creatively, like there's still some things in it that aren't great. Like, I think Peter's face coming out of the TARDIS is a little finicky. Now, granted, I also don't know. They're not going to be able to reference anything for that. How are you going to reference a full man's face in a tiny box? It just doesn't really, there's not really a one-to-one for that. So I think they did the best they could. The lighting was a little weird there, but especially the two main ones that really get me are when we first see like the furniture being sucked into the two-dimensional plane.
Oh, my thing is even before that.
Which one?
When you can see it moving down the wall.
Yeah, when you see it like the little almost snake-like slitherings.
It reminded me of that one part in Monsters, Inc.
Mm-hmm.
When Randall is
camouflaged,
actively being attacked by Boo, and he's flipping through all of his like backgrounds, but specific, not that moment in particular, but when he is like actively moving in a space, but he is camouflaged and you can just kind of see the silhouette of his form.
Mm-hmm. See, for me, what I really like about that like first slithering effect is that there's already that kind of shape on the wall.
Yeah.
And so to see them do it, it becomes this kind of trippy visual, like almost a kaleidoscopy kind of look.
I am forgetting the name of these. It's an optical illusion, but it's like it's specifically ones that find me at like 2 a.m. on Instagram. And what it is like, if you're staring at a picture for long enough.
Oh, a magic eye poster.
Yeah, I suppose. Mm-hmm. It's not magic eye, though, because it's specifically like, it is a tessellation, but then if you stare at it long enough, inside the tessellation, there is like the image of a bird.
Oh, okay.
Or a crab.
I think it's a magic eye. Maybe I'm wrong.
It might be magic eye, but there is a much like fancy dancier name for it. And it makes me feel like I have superpowers when I can like find it immediately. Because I'm also like, oh, it's usually because I am... I am not actively on any drug right now, but it makes me feel like I am. So mm-hmm. I'm like, ugh. I'm like the smartest, most capable person in the whole world. I found the horsey so fast.
Even before that, I really like the guy who's like calling for the police to try and tell them like what's happened. Mm-hmm. When you see him on the wall, he's like stretched out at an angle. So the camera has to like really get down against the wall for you to tell what's happened to him.
Yeah.
I think that's a really fun effect. But seeing the like couch get crunched in, but the way that it specifically gets sucked in where it's not all at once, because they're not perceiving the couch. They're only perceiving the feet of the couch, and they just keep pulling to get all of it. And so they keep pulling it down in chunks, and you're like picturing that happening to all these people.
Ugh.
That's what makes me go like,
Well, because we saw it before it happens with the couch. We saw it with the police officer.
Yeah, we see a little bit with the police officer, but also where knowing
it starts with her feet, and it's like she's falling into quicksand, except she's not going down, she's going
in,
down and then in, and yeah. getting pulled and stretched, she's getting
stretched
out
across a plane. Yeah.
Ugh.
And then my another one I really like is the boneless themselves, which I also love the name the boneless.
I could go with a different name.
I'm sure you could call it like the flat ones or something.
Yeah, because the boneless the makes me think of chicken wings. So I'm like, the boneless just makes me hungry.
It's also, there are also just creatures that are boneless, like jellyfish are boneless.
I guess, again, makes me hungry. Or makes me want to start poking things like at an aquarium. Did you know moon jellies, like since they have no central nervous system, they don't even know that they're being poked and prodded. That's why that's my favorite touch tank. They don't even know.
The way they designed them where they're still like vaguely human shaped, but they're still kind of like shifty all over, almost like they're made out of sand. Kinetic sand.
It's like they are only about 70% rendered.
Yeah, because the boneless have only really learned about three-dimensional beings over the course of like the last few days. And so this is their almost like first attempt at putting on like a suit.
Yeah.
Which is one, horrifying, and two, really visually engaging.
Yes, because even their faces both have and haven't particular form.
Uh-huh.
Where especially since we saw the murals where they know what faces look like, but it's kind of, it reminds me of like, I don't know if you've also had this experience watching those like makeup competition shows, mm-hmm. where you're watching these very talented artists sculpt alien makeups and you think to yourself, psh, that doesn't look too hard. And then you have, I don't think you'll be able to relate to this part, you have your high school teacher approach you after you've been in college for a year, mm-hmm. and say, hey, we're going to do Beauty and the Beast. Can you please do the makeup for the Beast? And you go, oh, yeah, piece of cake. That shouldn't be hard. And it's literally one of the hardest things you've ever had to do in your whole life. Because how on earth am I, a college freshman, supposed to sculpt something I've never seen before? And also sculpture, I don't know how that works. I just saw it on TV and it looked easy. Turns out it is not easy at all. That's the experience I think of what it's like to be a boneless.
You know what their faces specifically make me think of?
Well,
you ever seen, these are all over the internet. So
creepypasta?
I'm not promoting AI's uses, but you ever seen like an AI of us, like they took a still of an AI celebrity, but then this celebrity like turns their head and it looks like a totally different person because AI cannot like do the math on what a face should look like, only getting one side of it?
No, but I do have the experience of seeing people make Sims that look normal from the front, but when they turn their heads, they're all fucked up and crazy.
So it's like that.
Yeah.
Where it's like they understand like where the pieces should be, but they don't understand the level of depth that each thing should have. So they're all wrong.
Yeah.
And then like their necks have like these rivers of like unrendered material going through them. And I think it's great.
It's like a flatfish.
And then combine all of that with this really interesting dynamic of Clara having the Clara choosing to pretend to be the doctor.
Oh my God.
While the doctor is trapped in his box.
Yeah, the doctor in this is, I like that this is and isn't a Dr. Light.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a Dr. Light production-wise, because he only has to film in three locations. And one of them for like 5 minutes.
It's specifically Dr. Light, and why I say it like that is because it's not that he's absent. It's literally like he has to be in the TARDIS trying to figure out what the fuck is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you need to have him basically near his computer to figure out and explain what is going on and why these people are.
Yeah, he becomes the man in the chair for this
basically,
episode.
Basically, this episode needs him to be that. Mm-hmm. It does not need him running around with Clara trying to figure it out.
Yeah. The unfortunate thing about it being a Dr. Light episode, though, is that Peter Capaldi was not needed for filming all the time during production one day.
Oh, is this the story?
So one of my favorite stories at all of Doctor Who, production wise, I mean, they were filming at an old power plant for this episode. And obviously the Doctor's only needed for like that monologue where he steps out of the TARDIS.
Yeah.
So he spends most of the production day not being needed, but he's mm-hmm. there on set. So Peter Capaldi just went walking around.
Of course.
And then found himself in a room with a big red button in it.
Oh, no.
And in the most doctory move I've ever heard, pushes that button, finds the door behind him, locks. And he's panicking, trying to get the door open, when suddenly he figures out that he's pushed the button for an emergency shower. Because this is a power plant, and in case you got any uranium on you, you needed to be locked off and washed off. And so he is in full hair, makeup, and costume, and just comes back to set like a wet dog. Just looking like a puppy caught in the rain. Like, hello, I'm wet now.
That's amazing.
And Jenna Coleman has told this story, and she's like, even recounting the story, she cannot stop laughing. Just picturing Capaldi coming back to set, soaked head to toe from an emergency shower, because Peter Capaldi could not resist the urge to push a big red button.
That's so good.
If I didn't need any more excuses to love this episode, God, that's one of them.
If I didn't need another, or if I needed another reason why I think he might be my favorite doctor, mm-hmm. new modern doctor, that's it. I don't think this isn't a role for him. That's just how he is. I'm just watching
just a weird guy.
I'm just watching a mockumentary of Peter Capaldi. But what if this time he was very smart and from outer space?
God, I adore that story so much.
So funny.
In bad news, though, you didn't get any points for today. None points for either Cassie or Fassie question.
It's okay.
God, the shrinking TARDIS, though, is so good.
It is, and I am almost upset that it was that simple, mm-hmm. but if I'd have known that it was going to then be a handicap.
Yeah, or
like, but also having a TARDIS that is now phasing in and out of light streams, like, I think that's also.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a way to, because there's plenty of episodes where they have to sort of write the TARDIS out of the show. So I think it's a perfectly valid, like, the TARDIS keeps phasing in and out of existence is a perfectly valid way to get the TARDIS somewhere else for the story.
The TARDIS is and isn't here.
Yeah. I so very much love Capaldi, like, being stuck in the TARDIS while it's stuck on the train tracks and a train's coming. And so his way of doing it is to just use his hand to crawl the TARDIS off the tracks by finger. Not even by hand. It's literally by hand, but more accurately by fingers.
Yeah, Doctor Who, the hermit crab. It gave very specific thing energy.
From Adam's Family?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know? So when I was younger, I had a friend. Spoiler alert. I'm going to flex my cool friend for a second. I had a friend whose dad worked in he's an industry man. Mm-hmm. And so when she turned 13, he was able to get her and a group of us friends password reservations at the Magic Castle. Because he had a buddy that worked there. Mm-hmm. And so we went, and, you know, of course, this was very much in the Criss Angel era for me. So I was absolutely...
Your little mind was freaked.
Oh, my God. And it was right after Neil Patrick Harris was president of it. So there was a very specific Zoltar machine, but it was modeled to look like him.
That's fun.
It's very fun. But one of the rooms that we ended up going into, because they don't really, at least in my memory, there is not a specific, like, oh, this is the area if you want close-up magic. This is the area for more stage magic. You just kind of end up in places.
Mm-hmm. Like magic.
And one of the rooms that we went into had a very small stage, And the person that walked out on he didn't quite walk out. He introduced his hands first. And I went, that's a very bizarre thing to do. it was a man by the name of Christopher Hart. Do you know who that is?
I don't know, but I'm guessing from your story so far that he's the guy who plays the thing on Wednesday.
Not on Wednesday. No, this was this was the early 2000s. I'm aging myself.
I guess that's fair. But he played the thing.
But yeah, he's thing in the movies.
Oh, OK.
But that was his like.
Please tell me he introduced his hands as thing one and thing two.
No, because that's not at all related. But I did have the thought of like, yeah, you would become a close up magician after literally being a hand model on TV. Having to personify your individual digits, I'm sure that would lead to.
Oh, you mean these? And he just holds out his little fingies doing little jazz hands.
Basically. But that's all I could think about watching the doctor just crawling across the train tracks with his little hermit shell.
Yeah, dragging it across. And then when he finally gets the TARDIS off the train tracks, he does a little victory dance.
Mm-hmm.
But then his little victory dance is short-lived as his TARDIS falls backwards back out of the train tracks, and his only solution is to activate siege mode,
yeah,
which just turns it into a box. puts his box inside another box.
It turns it into the Congreve Cube. The companion in this one, because since Clara is
the doctor,
is the acting doctor, she mm-hmm. needs a companion.
Yeah, so she gets Rigsy.
Who's
this? Graffiti artist who's been stuck on community service cleaning up his own graffiti.
It's so cliche, but I love it.
Because he's not into murders.
Yeah, the way that he introduces himself to Clara is by saying that
he does graffiti,
not murder. Okay.
And he like lurches forward towards her when he says murder, which is most murdery thing one could do.
Yeah, when you actively bring up the word murder, odds are you're either into it or you're a murderer.
You're either a murderer or you're thinking about it.
That's what I said. Whenever I introduce myself to people, I go, hi, my name is Cassie. I have a podcast. I'm not into murder.
And you lunge forward at them with such intensity every time.
I'm not into blood. I don't think about it.
I do like Rigsy. I would have liked a little more exploration of his personality as opposed to.
I don't care. They put him in a box real quick. And I went, all right, we don't have time to explore each and every character in this right now. I'm sure that there is a much better way that they could have given him a little bit more character just in his lines and in his delivery. But also we're having to wrap our minds around what does a two-dimensional monster look like. So I'm not upset because my brain the entire time was going, I don't understand until I saw it, and then I understood, and I went, what are the odds of this room having a hanging chair?
Just the cosmic coincidences of being the doctor,
you know. And it's justified. The decor in the room did justify there being a hanging chair.
Yeah, it does.
Frankly, I would also love to have a hanging chair.
You just want a swing set or a hammock.
My God, if I had a hammock inside or a swing set, oh, I would be so happy.
I know. We talked about it during one of Matt Smith's Christmas specials.
Oh, my God, though, Zach, like if we had a room that had high enough ceilings and I could have a swing, not for sexy things, just for me to be full of bliss and joy as I'm kicking my little feet.
I think your joy is sexy, Cassie.
Thanks. Try not to kick any of the cats.
But just, I would have much rather learned more about, like, have Rigsy's personality fleshed out than have fucking Hardy Pooper Fenton following around the hallway. Judgmental, probably racist Fenton.
Oh, yeah. He just is horrible.
Just a deeply unpleasant man to just see and be around and hear.
I mean,
no offense
also,
to the actor. The actor's doing a fine job.
It's also something, too, where we all know a Fenton.
Yeah.
So I also don't think that he's doing a lot to we as the audience, specifically you and I, are doing a lot to color in specifics about his personality based off of people we have either are related to or have met at work.
And then, or like, the part of me that just likes moment-to-moment pleasure does not like Fenton. The part of me that enjoys art does, especially at the end when Fenton is saying, like, all those people dying was like killing the brushwood to save the great trees, referring to himself as a great tree, and the doctor's like, yeah, but maybe the wrong people died.
Yeah.
There's a part that's like, I 1000% understand where that feeling is coming from, doctor.
Yep.
Just this, like, I'm not going to kill you, but God, I wish you weren't around.
Yep.
There are so many people. That's where I'm at. Like, I don't want you to die, but I want you to go away.
I want you to just stop.
And there are people that I wish had died after you as opposed to before.
That's like, I know you've probably seen the thing or heard the thing of evil people live longer.
Because the underworld does not want them.
Oh my God, wherever they're going. It's just like, nah, we can wait. We can wait for you.
But speaking of your tire swing, or not tire swing, but your...
I'm not a gorilla, Zach. I don't want a tire swing.
Speaking of the indoor swing chair situation, that's when Danny chooses to call. Danny, who still does not know that Clara and the doctor hanging out.
She could just not answer the phone. She's literally fighting for her life, and that's when she decides to answer the phone.
Yeah, I mean... They do try to justify it a little bit in that Danny was specifically at the park waiting for them to have lunch together. And this is Clara having to be like, hey, I cannot do that.
Yeah.
So I do partly understand she feels an obligation to him in this moment because she has an obligation to him at this time.
Sure.
But it is also just like, come on, couldn't this have waited like 5 minutes? Couldn't you have called him right back after you swung out the window instead of mid swing?
Ooh, and then the doctor's mad at her.
Yeah, the doctor specifically says, excellent lying, Dr. Oswald. And
this was after specifically he called her out for being the doctor, or a doctor of lies. He's already teed it up.
Yeah, and so he goes, excellent lying, Dr. Oswald. And she basically just like says, thank you. Like, I didn't like lying to him. And she's he's like, I didn't mean to Danny. I meant you lied to me. Mm-hmm. You told me he was okay with this. She's like, well, he is okay with it. And he's like, yeah, because he doesn't know about it. You doctor of lies. I do appreciate that it feels like a very natural progression from the end of last story.
Yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, she lied to both doctor and Danny. And now the doctor has figured it out. Danny is certainly on his way to figuring that out. But also, like, the doctor likes having Clara around, so he's not going to kick her out. But he is going to call her out on it.
Yeah.
At the very end, I really like that moment where Clara's like trying to fish a compliment out of the doctor. And so she's like,
I did really good, right? You're going to tell me that I did good.
Tell me that I was the doctor and I was good. Say it. And he's like, Clara, you were an excellent doctor, but goodness had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
And just like,
That hurt my feelings.
And without going too much into detail, I do think this episode sort of sets up the rest of Clara's story arc.
Okay.
Like where she goes over the next season and a half of her story. I think this is the one that really like fit. They were trying to do this thing with her and Danny, but I think this episode really gets more of to like what Clara wants to do. And that is that Clara wants to be the doctor.
Yes.
Like that's where that's.
I mean, we saw it. Yeah. We saw it specifically, especially when the doctor is literally handing her the sonic and then like a little earpiece.
Yeah. Like as soon as she starts
the psychic paper.
Yeah. As soon as she gets handed the psychic paper and the sonic screwdriver, her first question is, does this mean I'm you? And I really like that. That just feels very authentic to her.
Yeah, that's the next. It has the same energy of like when you're working at a job.
Mm-hmm.
And at least in my experience, like I was never. I mean, I'm a manager now. Suckers. But when I was working at the cafe, I was never, ever any kind of bar. Like I was never the bar manager or supervisor. I was a lead. But I was never in charge of anything more than taking over what?
It's just, you talk about this reminder because I'm the lead technician at my pharmacy. And I once joked to another tech that I'm his boss. And he was like, you're not my boss. You're me with a hat. And that's just what I picture with that is you're a barista with a hat.
I mean, yeah, because there had to be a way to keep my hair out of my face. But the specificity of your boss or like my boss isn't there. The bar manager, they're gone. So for today, I'm acting manager. And it's like that episode of SpongeBob where he's manager for a day.
Mm-hmm.
Or a hall monitor at night. Just that, like, I'm in charge now. This is what it would be like. Me, I get to wear the hat.
The power is mine.
Basically, mm-hmm. whatever I say goes. Meh. Which is par for the course for Clara, especially since the natural progression from Dr. Companion, if you're looking to, you know, propel in this business, is to become the doctor yourself.
Yeah, but and we talked last episode about their like very intense friendship and how there isn't really, I mean, we've had like twin flame, but they have like a very like mm-hmm. platonic ideal relationship. And I do think that's like that just mirrors the intensity of their relationship where it's like she admires him and what he does and the way he lives so much that this is what she wants. She is addicted to the doctor's lifestyle so much that she wants to be the doctor, but not in like a creepy way. No. It's just a very it's a very affectionate, like I love what this person is, does, and stands for so much. I want to try and embody their role.
She wants to be the doctor, too, because she wants to do the same kind of good.
Yeah.
She is rather proud of herself that, oh, we saved so many people. Like, oh, all of these four people are saved. The doctor also has to sit there and go, yeah, and a lot of people died.
Yeah.
I do like that they managed to figure out a way to have the doctor FaceTiming without him physically being like on a phone.
Yeah. There was like, I just hacked your optic nerve with nanotech. Hope you're okay with that.
Like, it's that's some sciencey wincy bullshit, but whatever. Sure, I'm on board.
Like, speaking of just like him lying, he just said, stick this earpiece in, and she's like, okay. And it's not just an earpiece, Ouch. It's full of nanotech.
Ouch, doctor.
I put bugs in you.
Yeah, sorry. I've hacked your body now without your explicit permission. Hope that's okay.
Yeah, I'm in your eye. I'm in your eye and your ear.
I can see what you see, and I can also hear what you're hearing and still be able to talk to you. God, what if you forgot to take that out later?
Like, he starts talking shit about her while she's...
The way? If I... Oh.
Although he talks shit about her to her face.
Yeah,
it's like, she's got a really round face and she's old and we look the same age.
The way that I absolutely would be so thrilled to be able to hack some of my friends' brains if I could see and hear what they see and hear.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
you shouldn't be trusted with that power at
no.
all.
I'm too wily for it.
Clara could be the doctor. Cassie should not be.
No,
it's too much power.
Yeah. Too much power. Too many. Never mind. I'm not going to finish
all
that.
The time and space Cassie would spend it to go back and watch Phantom of the Opera way too many times.
If I were the doctor, because now this is where this bit is going. If I were the doctor, definitely would take a high def camera. Go to Dinosaur Times, take so many pictures and like sound audio, because that's a thorn in my side. I know that what we think dinosaurs look like, I think that shit's wrong. I think it's all wrong. Have you seen a penguin skeleton?
No, I have not.
Okay. Penguins.
I like penguins too much to go birds, ripping out their skeletons.
Birds specifically don't really look like what they look like, because birds are like 80% feather.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot of animals that don't look like their bones because of fat deposits and muscle. And so I don't think dinosaurs look anything like that. Mm-hmm. I think that is probably the closest facsimile that we...
Being dinosaurs are all fat?
Oh my God, yes. I think that dinosaurs are chunky. I think they have hair. And at least feathers, like absolutely they have feathers. Colors, I think
Triceratops, the world, more like Thiceratops.
I think that the world was way more colorful and awesome. So there's no way that those bitches would just be brown. Like, look at exotic birds. Like, those bitches are orange and blue. Those are the only two colors.
The T in T-Rex stands for thick.
The T in T-Rex stands for teal. It's a teal Rex. So all I'm saying is if I were the doctor, I'd go back in time, actually get some like photo evidence of everything I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also go back to, I think it's 1986, and watch the original Phantom of the Opera with Sarah Brightman and Michael Crawford. So many times.
And show them all the pictures of dinosaurs.
Yeah.
You in the
go backstage.
Michael Crawford, look at my pictures of dinosaurs.
Go backstage. Hey, yeah, I would really like to talk to you about dinosaurs. Excuse me, Mr. Crawford.
Just experimenting with all forms of autism, all hyperfixations.
Musical theater and dinosaurs.
Musical theater, dinosaurs. I'm sure you'll hop on a train at some point. Drive a big truck.
I'm sure that there's a conductor that wants to hear me talk to them about dinosaurs.
Drive a big truck.
And how exotic birds are descended from dinosaurs and how there's no way that they're just brown.
Go on the Titanic.
No, I wouldn't go on the Titanic. That's insane.
Go to World War II just to watch.
Hey. No, too sad. But but would I absolutely go to World War II so I could try to find the fucking Ark of the Covenant? Yup.
Go to World War II so you could stuff Hitler in a cupboard.
Yeah, so I could ask Hitler, where's all the gold, sir? Tell me, you're going to kill yourself at the end of this. Where is all of the gold? Where is all of the gold from Versailles? From the one fucking ballroom that you tore apart. And now everything in there is fake gold because they don't actually have the real stuff anymore because you lost it.
Turns out we know where all of it was. It's that you get time travel and you stole all of it from Hitler.
It's me. Everything. I go back into my little TARDIS. I go, oh, fuck. I'm the British Museum now. Damn it.
I'm just in the corner like, she's the British Museum now.
When did you get here?
You're saying I'm not invited? You're doing all this time travel. You're not inviting me?
No, I'm getting a different companion.
Hurtful.
Bailey and Monty. Those are my companions.
You're going to bring two little kitty cats to dinosaur times?
I'm not. Actually, I would bring two little kitty cats in the TARDIS. I would never see them again. They would be gone.
They would be lost.
Oh, my God.
Just be you running down the halls whistling for them.
Yep. Shaking a churu pouch, which actually doesn't make noise, turns out. What would you do if you had a time machine?
Ooh.
If you were the doctor.
I mean, they do a lot of it in the show. I would love to see like the end of the earth. Like, but like,
okay, scary.
I'd like to know where like where humanity goes in the future.
Here's 2050.
Yeah.
It's not that far away.
I will be there.
Yeah, like we will actively see.
I like
it
to see the end of time, like the very last moments. And then I'd go back. Then I had to go all the way back and see the very first moments and compare them.
OK, or you could just fast forward it like they do in that one episode of Futurama.
I'd like to go to where they film Magic School Bus on Neptune.
Mm-hmm.
And watch them filming it.
OK.
The live action show Magic School Bus. I would like to be there for whenever humanity makes first contact.
Oh, I want to find the aliens that find the gold disc first and go, what the fuck is this shit?
I want to find the aliens that Barack Obama talked about last week.
Ooh.
I think it's like 2 weeks ago by the time this episode comes out.
Yeah. Oh, here's another thing I want. And this one's kind of wild. Stay with me. I want to take all of the billionaires with me in the TARDIS,
mm-hmm.
drop them off in medieval Europe and just watch them flail about.
I'd like to fly past the Sphinx and be the one who takes off his nose.
Mm, interesting. Want to steal the moon?
Steal the moon?
Steal the moon.
Fucking grew over here?
Yeah, well, when it's still small, like when it's still
little.
Yeah,
before it cracks into an egg and turns into a space dragon.
Yeah, you get it. You follow.
Actually, you know what I want to do? Like, legitimately, this is not a bit, what I would do.
Oh, dip.
Hang on.
Serious.
I got to make
quick.
Sure I got this right.
Oh, the Hanging Gardens. I would love to see those. That's also not a bit. There are certain, like, wonders of the world that we can never see. Oh, I want to go way back into, like, early American history.
Because
there were, like, Native American cities, like full on, like hundreds of thousands of people, but you know,
so
they don't exist
legitimately
anymore.
What I would love to, and this would be fucking with the timeline on so many levels, but this is genuinely like, if I had time travel, this is what I would change. Mm. Do you know when the first steam engine was made?
No.
Give me a guess. Do you have like a guess for like what year?
1801.
So it would have been like the late 1800s. That was when the Industrial Revolution began.
Okay.
That's what we would first think of as the steam engine, because that's, again, when the Industrial Revolution began. The actual first steam engine was made in the first century.
Damn.
By a Greek mathematician named named Heron. But it was just like a steam engine that just made a ball spin around.
Okay.
It was called an aelopile, and it was just like a toy. It was just like a neat party thing that he had like decorated around his house. People were like, oh, that's a cool little novelty thing. Meanwhile, like if people really sat down and looked at it for more than just like 10 minutes at a party, they'd realize they could have done the Industrial Revolution 2000 years early.
So it would have been you telling them this.
I would have been like, hey, dummies, think about what you can do with this other than just make this ball spin.
People's brains, though, needed to cook for 2,000 more years. Though,
no,
dude.
They didn't. Someone did it then. They didn't need to cook. Someone did it.
I would like everybody listening to understand Zach's arms are going crazy.
Like,
he's getting so legitimately angry.
I could be in space right now. Like, imagine for just a second. We had all the Industrial Revolution started in the first century. Right now we are in the 21st century. Just put our technology 2000 years in the future.
Okay.
Like we would be experiencing what to us is the 41st century's worth of technology. If people had just had the thought when watching this man's stupid fucking steam toy. Anyway. Sorry, that's what I would change if I was a time traveler.
How angry would it make you if I told you that there is a version of this world that did do that way out in the cosmos?
That's where the aliens are. Yeah. That read the golden disc.
Yeah, well, I told you that is my earnest belief that there are too many stars in the sky for there to not be duplicates of this world.
I mean, I don't believe there are duplicates of the world, but I do believe there are aliens. Like, I do believe there is another form of sentient life.
Oh, there has to be.
The question is, are we
better than them?
Really, are we further along? Like, are we the furthest along species or not is really my question. Are there other ones roaming the galaxy, or are they still, like, wiping their ass with leaves?
I mean, we do that too.
Yeah, but not all of us.
Yeah. Specifically, are there species that are coming upon and building the first steam engine toy?
And they're going like, oh,
neat trick. Anyways, so about those gold drachma that you have.
Anyway, I'm sorry I totally derailed this podcast about two-dimensional people to talk about a steam toy, an aelopile.
Well, here's my thing. Overall, So I genuinely struggle quite a big deal with with dimensions. Mm-hmm. Like, two dimension is only something that I understand as being like film, some like media I can watch.
Mm-hmm.
Going beyond that and saying, oh, two dimension is something that exists on this piece of paper. Well, no, because the paper, therefore two dimension, but I can crumple it up and turn it into a ball. Then it's three dimensions.
Now, here's the thing. I genuinely believe I genuinely think that part of the reason why they could use those like people they absorbed as like skin suits is because going from a third dimension to a second dimension just kills you, because it's like just stepping into pure darkness, because our brains can't perceive anything other than what we have in front of us.
Well, that's also like I keep referring to it because it's one of my favorites, that episode of Futurama where they go from being in the like animated world to being in the quote unquote 2D world, where they have to like walk over one another because they can't step around each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that context, it makes sense to me. Then I remember that it's an animated series and it makes my brain hurt way more. Also, I didn't like Wallmaster. I did not like
when they figure out how to do 3D and they make a big old hand.
I hate that. I hated that because I saw it in the distance and I went, uh-oh. And I was hoping it was just my mind playing tricks on me, because that is my least favorite part of any Zelda game.
Just a big old hand coming
at
you. Oh,
I hate it.
Picking you up like a little kitty cat.
In D&D, love it. Love Maxwell's Earthen Grasp. Any other context? Nope. I do not want to be.
You want to know why, Cassie? Because you can't see it when it's Maximilian's Earthen Grasp. It's just a little figure that I put on the map.
Mm-hmm.
When it's Wallmaster or in Doctor Who, you see that hand move. You hear its knuckles crack at you.
Yeah, it just and especially it's the way that the hand picked up the guy as if he was a little bird on a stick. Just shoot.
He's like it's a vending machine claw just coming for you.
I hate that.
I think the only thing that would have made it worse is if you had seen the hand going, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you, get you, get you, get you, get you.
Got your body. Oh.
Just a giant nose. Got your nose.
And I also am very happy that it didn't devolve into a doodle bob logic.
What were you thinking? Like, you think the words could be like erased?
I was very worried that if you put down a piece of paper, they were just going to get like
stuck to it,
stuffed inside of it.
Mm.
But I like the out logicking of like, they're going to try to reanimate and redimensionify something that didn't exist in the first place. Mm-hmm. Now, saying that this, and no disrespect, that a graffiti artist could so quickly paint an exact replica of a rusty door in maybe 45 seconds? No, unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was some truncated time, but also like it. I appreciated that the
logic was there and it did not. It was not doodle bobbed.
Yeah. And I appreciate that they looped back in this that Riggsy's personal skill.
That like, he is an artist.
Yeah. They made it relevant, like who he is and what he does.
Yes.
I did appreciate that.
Yes.
I also really like the Doctor's monologue when he's talking about how he's like erasing them. And it's because like I let the record show that I gave you a chance. I tried to talk. I tried to be nice. And I don't know what you want, but I know that I don't want it. I don't know if you're here to invade or infiltrate or replace us, but whatever it is, you get out of my dimension. Goodbye.
Yeah.
This plane is protected. And he pushes a button and shoos them all back home.
I didn't love how that's how it ended, but I'm also like, nah, it's kind of what we were building towards.
Well, I also, it shows that the Dalek was wrong about the Doctor in a certain sense. Like, the Doctor is not just a murder machine. He spent this whole episode trying to understand and communicate and like make a bridge, just extend a hand.
Yeah.
And when that hand gets slapped away, the Doctor's like, okay, you were like, he even says, you're choosing to be a monster. This is the role you were choosing to play. So my role is the man who defeats the monsters.
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot.
Yeah,
I think that's a really it's a really strong understanding of the Doctor. And you could tell that Jamie Matheson was a big fan of the show before this episode came out.
Yes.
I also think you could tell this episode was the one he had been sitting on for a long time, because he had been trying to almost in the writing team a couple of times. He'd been trying to get on the writing team since Christopher Eccleston's season. Like,
wow.
He'd been working on it for a while. And so I really think you can tell that he at least had been gestating this idea for a long time and yeah, really thought it out. Because I think this episode really works on a lot of levels.
Yes.
This
was not a first draft episode.
No, this is not a first draft. This is not slapdash. And also, I think Mummy on the Orient Express showed that he's also, even with an episode he is more truncated on time with, he is still incredibly talented.
Yeah.
And he,
at the very least, at communicating a story as quickly as you can without having too much expository, like, oh, this is what we're doing here right now.
Yeah, he's really, really good.
It's the let me show you what it is that we're going to do.
Yeah, he's really, really good at coming up with visuals that work for the show. Like the mummy on the train, great visual.
I wonder
the two-dimensional people, great visual.
Does he write for animated series?
I don't think so. I'm not really sure what else he works on, to be honest with you.
Because the way that he is writing and the way that we're speaking about it does make me wonder if he has like a plot line of like, here are thumbnails of what this moment would look like.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like he worked on cartoons as such, but he did work on comics. Like he worked on.
Oh,
So he did work with.
Oh.
Visual material, specifically like it looks like a French sci-fi comic called Heavy Metal.
Yeah, then absolutely. Then if that's the case, that makes perfect sense. how and why he is good at visual storytelling.
Yeah.
Because comics and graphic novels are exactly that. Turns out.
Yeah, I think he's a great writer. I really hope he comes back to do more of the show. He does a couple more episodes, but he hasn't come back since Capaldi's era. And I would really love for him to do that. Because these two episodes he's done are two of my favorite in the entire run of the show. I know a lot of people might. I mean, I wasn't necessarily one of them because I try to respect the people who make these production decisions more than my own dumb self. But there are people who are like, when Moffat leaves, it would be great to have this guy be the showrunner if he gets the Doctor this well.
Yeah.
And also, especially knowing that how little he's done for the show since Capaldi's era, there's a problem. It's like, I don't think he wants to. So there's that. But I have a huge amount of respect for Jamie Matheson. I love both those episodes. I think this one's in top 10. I think Mummy and the Orient Express, if not top 10, that's top 15. Like, I love both these episodes so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I am glad that you enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, I have the impression that this will probably be one that I think about for a while.
Yeah, if only just for the way a couch gets sucked into the floor.
Yeah, if only because now I'm terrified of long tunnels and trains.
A picture of a train on the wall, like a train got sucked in.
Twice now we've had trains, and now I'm very scared of trains.
The man really likes trains. He apparently wanted to have the train conductor's name be Perkins, because that's a friend of his name who apparently actually works on trains.
Oh, is that why the conductor's
that's
name
why
is Perkins?
The engineer in the other episode is named Perkins, because they changed the name here, and he's like, can I still put my friend in the show and make him a train man?
Nerd. That's so sweet, though.
Yeah. And then, of course, at the very end, we have a little cameo from Miss Missy.
My Clara, I'm so glad I chose you. I know you know and I don't know, and that's the whole reason for this podcast is I don't know.
This has just confirmed that the woman in the shop that gave Clara the phone number to the TARDIS's phone is Missy.
Okay, I don't remember that happening ever, though, so it might as well not have happened.
Well, that was from back during Matt Smith's era. She said that he asked, how did you get this number? And she says a woman in the shop gave it to me, said it was a help desk number. And another woman in the shop that basically picked Clara to be the Doctor's companion is Missy. Missy sent her that way. I don't know if that gives you any thoughts as to who Missy might be.
Is she like Time Lord God?
Missy, master of all time and space.
Like, that's the only thing I could think about is, like, is this just some kind of, is Missy some kind of, like, archangel?
Another Time Lord picking on the Doctor.
Yeah. But, like, what do you do? It's so, like, I know that we had just discussed if Clara is looking at, like, well, the next step up from being companion is being the Doctor. What if being Missy is the next step up from being a Time Lord?
That's an interesting thought.
And I know it's wrong because that was your response. That's usually your response when I say something that is incorrect.
I mean, you'll find out in a couple episodes either way. That's part
okay,
of the,
well, fuck
part
right
of the two-part
off.
Finale of the season.
I'm just saying. So if that's not the case, then whatever the answer is probably stupid. And I won't like it.
I'm really curious how you're gonna feel when we get there.
Oh, I know I'm gonna be mad about it. I'm already mad about it.
But I loved this. Next episode, though, is a really divisive episode. And so I'm really curious how you're gonna fall on
Wiki.
It. Some people like it. A lot of the people who worked on the show defended it at the time, but there's a lot of people who hate it. Like, really, really, like, some people either, like, in my experience, nobody thinks it's the best episode ever, but some people do think it's Capaldi's worst episode.
Okay.
And other people think it's, like, really sweet and poetic, and I'm really curious to see how you're going to fall on it. Because, like I said, it's a really divisive episode, and I know that sometimes when people really don't like something, you will stand up to bat for it.
Yep.
So we will find out how you feel about that when we watch next week's episode, In the Forest of the Night.
Well, all right. I don't know how you're going to write your way out of this ending.
I'm going to write my way out of this by talking about this on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
There it is. Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed?
hope you all enjoyed that, especially considering that may have been our dumbest ad ever. Thank you, as always, for your continued support. It means so much to us. Special thanks go to our Big Daddy Dalek patrons, Andrew Blewett, David Gansel, Travis Aiken, and Daniel Lindgren. Next week, we're taking a long stroll through the never-ending forest, so we'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are still Whose Days.